Whether you keep them in your home or love to see them in theirs, these are the creatures that bring us all together.
Reptiles. We're going to be delving into the experiences of reptile lovers from around the block and around the world. This is the Reptile Talk Podcast.
Boom. What's going on, everybody? This is Jeremy Turgeon from Brass Man Reptiles.
And I'm Rob, and I'm creeping it real.
Hey. So today's episode, we're going to be joined by our buddy Josh Ortiz in a few. But today's episode, originally, we were going to do a recap on the first, the first two in-person meetings in North Carolina regarding the Tegu ban, which means we originally were going to be doing this video tomorrow.
Yep.
And we're also streaming on three different places right now, which is wonderful.
What?
I don't even know if Rob knows that. We're streaming on my YouTube. We're also streaming on my personal Facebook profile, and we're streaming on the Reptile Talk Podcast Facebook profile. We're streaming everywhere. So welcome, everybody that is watching. And everybody on Instagram, on Instagram. Everybody on Instagram, too bad for you. You got to go to YouTube or Facebook. Everybody on YouTube, of course, if you want to drop a super chat down there, we appreciate it. We will highlight it and talk about whatever you want to talk about there. Again, originally, we were supposed to be talking about the how the first two meetings went down here in North Carolina with regards to the Tegu ban and native species rule changes as far as needing importation paperwork and stuff like that. And that didn't happen. Why didn't it happen, Rob?
There's a couple different reasons why that didn't happen. The official reason is because of COVID. The COVID cases in North Carolina are rising. But from what I'm seeming to hear from a bunch of different people, it also sounds like maybe some slimy politics involved. And it's not the reptiles that are slimy, just to reiterate.
I don't know, man. I've seen some pretty slimy reptiles.
just water snakes.
It's just water snakes. So here's the big problem with that. And I just saw Josh just entered backstage. We'll bring him on in just a second. The biggest problem with losing these opportunities to speak is, you know, we originally were going into this thinking, okay, we've got four different opportunities to speak to this committee. And there may have been some people who were interchanged at different locations, depending upon where committee members had to travel to and whatever. So it was an opportunity for us to speak to different people all over the state with regards to this that are involved in this. Now we only have one opportunity. So the impact of being able to speak, especially multiple times to the same people, we really want to be able to drive this point home and to also become that familiar face in the room, so to speak, especially for those who are going to be speaking at multiple meetings. We'll give you that chance, you know, to initiate some conversation with certain people in the room, be it people on the committee or, like we were discussing, trying to link up with state biologists and different key members, that we want to just be aware of being in the state of North Carolina, but also that are key players when it comes to, you know, these things being being brought to everybody's attention and these potential rule changes that we may see more of, we probably will see more of as the year progresses, which is not wonderful. So now we only have this one opportunity to speak on this Zoom hearing or Zoom meeting. This is great because it means there's really no excuse for people to not show up. Even if you're, now at work, you can click the link to register. I'll actually make sure that the link is put you can click the link to register for that meeting, and then literally you can just join the meeting and then put your phone off to the side. We don't necessarily need you to speak so much as need you to be a block on the camera screen. The numbers are going to be of vital impact just as much as the people who are speaking. And Phil will be speaking. And I would urge everybody, of course, to be following US ARC, signing up for those newsletters. But I would urge everybody to go check out last week's episode of the podcast where we spoke with Phil and went into some of these things a little bit more in depth. So we only have this one chance to speak, which means it's kind of like all or nothing here. So again, there's no excuse. I'm really hoping that we see a solid turnout from North Carolina Reptile Keepers. It sounded like there were certain people that were maybe happy that this was now the only option, or was an option in general, just because now they'd have a chance to speak. So hopefully we see those. We see a lot of squares in the room in opposition to this. Do you have anything else you want to add, Rob, before I bring Josh in?
Just real quick, again, if you are listening to this right now, go to usark.org, usark.org, and the alert should be right up next to the top. You can click on there. It's got a direct link to where you can sign up to be in this upcoming hearing. The hearing is going to be on January 20th, 2022. If you're listening to this way in the future, it's not going to make sense to you. But if you're listening to it right now, in the current time where this is still important, click on that link, especially if you live in North Carolina and are a reptile keeper or just have a vested interest in, people being able to enjoy their animals. This upcoming weekend in Durham, which is right next to me, there is a Show Me Reptiles show. So I'll be going to that. I'm going to try and kind of push around the word to some of the vendors, make sure that they're all signed up, talk to Mickey, see what we can do about getting people involved and getting people tied in.
Absolutely. I had a great conversation with Mickey in South Carolina at the show down in Greenville. I think it was in Greenville. I don't even remember where the hell I was. just kind of about what we can be doing better, or what we can be kind of focusing towards as a community when it comes to this. But so we're going to bring Josh on. I see Josh is like texting or doing some random but we're going to bring Josh on. So Josh was instrumental. He was one of the few people that was fighting the South Carolina Tegu ban, and it obviously was a
and
massive...
showed up. He showed up for all those people who didn't.
That's right.
He showed up,
and he was greatly impacted by the South Carolina Tegu ban. It was a massive part of his business, but I wanted to get him in on this because, first of all, he fought something similar. But second of all, to talk about kind of like tegus in general, Josh has done so much work with tegus over the years. I mean, it was a better part of his business. He definitely has a vested interest in understanding what's going on and also the ability to call out some of the BS that surrounds this proposed ban. So I'm going to bring him on real quick. We'll get me to shut up.
Hey, what's up,
dude?
Boom! There he is.
Nice to see you guys. I like your background, Jeremy. That's really fancy.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
You're just nice too, Rob. But Jeremy...
No.
It reminds me of the
Jeremy's room right there. Yeah. I was like, dude, did they specifically paint this for you? Because this is like nice.
Dude, you want to know what's funny is when Lenny got this place, he was like, dude, check this out. They got New York in here. And he's from New York. So he's like, they got New York in the house.
That's awesome. Heck yeah. So I had a question for you guys on the meetings. Mm-hmm. So yes. Zoom meetings, I heard you guys talking about it, right? So what's the, I don't know, because I feel like it's a good and bad thing that they have the one meeting, because if someone happens to be working at that time, not everyone works 9 to 5. They simply won't be able to attend it. And I guess this is a question for the committee members and people hosting the meeting, but it just seems like if they were going to have the in-person meetings, it's really not a stretch to just have multiple Zoom meetings, right? I mean, if anything, it would take less time and less resources to have those Zoom meetings. So it seems like it's not, I don't like conspiracy theories. That's really not my style. But in addition to COVID, which is obviously a legitimate concern, I don't understand why they simply can't have multiple Zoom meetings. I mean, that's, I guess, another topic for a different discussion, but it just seems really odd to me. I don't understand that. I mean, I requested. I actually sent them an email. I haven't got a reply yet. Because they should have multiple Zoom meetings. If anything, it's even easier for them because they could do it from the comfort of their home.
Especially where they had already blocked out that time out of their schedule to be doing this. So it's like they're trying – it sounds like they're trying to cut the amount of opportunities for people to oppose it.
What's all around you, almost everywhere you look, and makes your life better? Birds. Learn all about these beautiful creatures in this wonderful new podcast called Birds of a Feather Talk Together. Two experts guide two newbies on their journey to learn more. Mallard ducks, ivory-billed woodpeckers, Hawaiian honeycreepers, blue jays, cardinals, sandhill cranes, and more. Each week we discuss a different bird and walk away with a better understanding of the birds all around us. Oh, and we have a ton of fun doing it. Listen now. You're going to like learning about these birds. I guarantee it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So I could talk about the tegu portion. I mean, that's not the only part of what they're trying to present. But in my opinion, and not only because I have an interest in tegus, but in my opinion, that's probably the most pressing issue because that's like really restrictive. They're literally saying like all tegus.
Yeah, no, all of them.
At all. That's really insane. That's nuts.
Yeah.
In South Carolina, what we did here, we spoke to the legislators here. And when we spoke to them, to SCDNR, and we basically reasoned with them, not to give a little bit of background on the different types of species and the different types of tegus, but just to kind of conceptualize this, even Colombian tegus, which is a smaller species, they're more equatorial. So they're from a very warm climate. I mean, they're a lot of their range is actually warmer than Florida. Majority of the range actually is. And they do not brumate that species. If you brumate that species, it's similar to like brumating like an Asian water monitor. If you try to brumate an Asian water monitor and have it cool for too long, you're going to come back to a dead monitor. It's the same thing with a Colombian tegu. If I took a Colombian tegu for 2 or 3 weeks, say, you know what, I'm going to put it really cold, not feed it, not give it water, it's going to be dead or nearly dead. Mm-hmm. So it seems like, see, here's the issue here. It's problematic because is this decision being made for all tegu species just because of lack of knowledge? The people that are passing this regulation, they just aren't very knowledgeable in the situation? Or are they knowledgeable and they are choosing to ignore these common sense exceptions that should be made to it, right? So anyway, so it includes Colombian tegus, very popular pets, small species, doesn't brumate. There's only been recorded any sort of invasive population of those in portions of Florida, and they make a very, very, very small percentage of the invasive animals there. And the reason being is because they're not even tolerant to the cool downs they would experience in Florida. I mean, they literally die. So you have a rough winter there, and then they're pretty much all dead. So to have them regulated anywhere, now they're regulated in Alabama, which Alabama gets cold. Alabama gets as cold as a round man in South Carolina. They're regulated, they're proposing it in North Carolina. All of Florida, they're going to be they're already regulated. So that's very odd on the Colombian tegus. And then the red tegus, so you guys have seen red tegus many times, right? I'm assuming. Yeah. So red tegus, their environment for red tegus, they occupy Argentina, they occupy Paraguay. Some people say some portions of Uruguay, but we don't have any of those that would derive from Uruguay in this country. But anyways, they come from like a semi-arid environment. So think of like Cyclura, like rhino iguanas, right? So they come from like very dry, arid areas, right? Or semi-arid areas. So species like that, they haven't evolved to be in humid areas like you would have along the East Coast here, right? And in addition to that, they cannot tolerate cold to the extent of a black and white tegu. Let me tell you how I brumate my red tegus, which are the ones I breed here since I can't breed black and whites or anything like that anymore legally. So the red tegus here, right? Once it hits around Halloween time, usually my temperatures here are in the 50s and the red tegus start getting a little bit congested. It's a little bit too much for them to bear, right? So I have to bring them indoors and I keep them at 60 degrees all winter, 60, 62. If they go under 60 degrees for a prolonged period of time, they're very susceptible to respiratory infections, right? And this is all the information I gave the South Carolina DNR. And the so in addition to not being as humid tolerant, right, of humidity, they're not very cold tolerant like you would have for like a black and white tegu, right? And where their natural range is, it's more the interior portion of South America, right? So that's why it's semi-arid there in that portion of Argentina and Paraguay where they're from. But in addition to that, they don't brumate very long. So, you know, most of the U.S., mm-hmm. right, from, let's say, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, you don't see most of your local reptiles for about half the year, right? So from about mid-October to, let's say, mid-April, you do see some on occasion if you have warm days. You know, obviously, you'll see certain reptiles that are extremely cold tolerant. But I'm saying, by and large, you don't see your local reptiles for 6 months out of the year, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it is in a lot of different ranges. Where red tegus are from, they do not experience that length of cold temperatures for that period of time. So my tegus here, my red tegus, in mid-February around Valentine's Day, they're all waking up. Even though I have them at 60 degrees, they're all waking up, but I cannot put them outside because in my area in South Carolina, which is far warmer than where you guys are at least the portion of South Carolina I'm in, they would die outside. Because in February here, the daytime temperature is 70s, which is fine. But the nighttime temperature is 40s, maybe 50 degrees. They would die. One or two nights, three nights in a row, it'll be tough on them. But when you're talking about like weeks on end at those temperatures, they would die. So mid-February, I cannot put them outside. So basically, since they do brumate for a shorter period of time, from mid-February up until about the beginning of April, so about 6 weeks, I have to keep them awake indoors, right? So then I keep them awake indoors, the red tegus. Then I take them and put them outside when it's adequate. So we're talking not just one barrier of temperature. A lot of people think, oh, well, it's too cold for red tegus in North Carolina, South Carolina. But it's not just that. It's not that simple. It's too humid. If they get overly humid, they actually get sick for an extended period of time if they're too humid. If the temperature goes too cold, they get sick. If they brumate for too long, they die. That's the reason you don't even see red tegu invasive populations even in Florida. Even in South mm-hmm. Florida, you don't see mm-hmm. invasive populations of red tegus. And red tegus are extremely popular in the pet trade. And you don't see, you haven't seen, and once in a blue moon, you might see, I know someone, for example, that's been catching tegus in South Florida for a large portion of his income, all over South Florida for about 8 years. Literally, especially back in the day when there was more of them, caught hundreds of tegus each year, especially back in the day, like 8 years ago before they had a little bit more of a handle on the situation. And all those, probably over the years, thousands that he caught a single red tegu. And he told me that literally he could walk up to it and just pick it up right off the floor. So it was obviously someone's pet.
Somebody's pet, yeah.
Yeah, obviously. He said his thing was fat and big and chunky. So I'm going to relate this in. So basically, you're talking about regulating Colombian tegus, right? Zero invasive potential, even in Florida, even in Georgia, South Carolina, so definitely in North Carolina. Red tegus have zero invasive potential, right? So black and whites are really the only one that should even be mentioned, period. So when they're mentioning these regulations, the only thing they should even be potentially considering is black and white. So that's the only thing we should even be tackling with these legislators. Why the other tegus run into the conversation? It's stupid to me. I'm sorry. It's just idiotic. It just makes no sense. And they think because they have similar names, they look kind of similar, that they're all similar. To me, that's like saying, oh, well, a coyote and a domesticated dog and a fox, oh, they're all canines. They all look pretty similar. They're the same, right? When someone says that about a Colombian tegu, red tegu, black one, that's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah.
I'm like, mm-hmm. God.
It's frustrating.
It's very frustrating, of course. Anyway, so we should really, the conversation should only be about black and white tegus. So let's talk about black and white tegus, right? Black and white tegus, especially the ones in this country, come from Argentina, and they come from regions bordering like Paraguay, Uruguay area primarily, and then there's portions of them going into Brazil, but those are primarily known as blue tegus, which are also not very cold tolerant, but they're categorized as the same species, Salvatore Marinae. So black and white tegus, they like it humid. They like it cold. The black and white tegus, they go under the ground. They could stay in the 50s, no problem, as long as it's upper 50s, and it's for about like 5 or 6 months. they're able to invade South Florida, right? As you go north into in Florida, it's no big coincidence that there's less and less and less and less and less and less and less Tegus, right? And then the only time they've actually had a significant amount of sightings, not in one season, I'm talking about year after year after year, has been in Georgia, right? And the portion of Georgia is actually quite warm. But South Carolina DNR, I don't really want to talk about them much because that's not the point of this conversation. But they used to be on good terms with me, right? So when they had a good rapport with me, they would share information with me and discuss things with me. At the time that they were speaking with me in Georgia, there was never a single hatchling, a single nest, a single egg, nothing to prove that there was any invasive population in Georgia whatsoever. There was literally just adult tegus found year after year. Bear in mind, these could literally be the same exact tegus seen year after year. So there's no invasive, because that's a big myth that there's an invasive population in Georgia. There's a sightings of adult tegus year after year with no proof of proliferation whatsoever. Because what an adult animal, and you guys know this, right? An adult human, an adult snake, an adult anything is going to be far more hardy than a neonatal baby version of that same species, right?
Right.
So what happens is, yes, an adult tegu is going to be far more cold tolerant than their baby, than their neonate or their hatchling counterpart, right? So, and that's important because to have the full life cycle, it can't just be tolerable for the adult portion of that species. It has to be tolerable for the babies because that's what becomes adults in the future, obviously. Obviously.
Yeah.
They've never found that piece of the puzzle, which I'm assuming is probably one of the reasons why they haven't regulated them in Georgia quite yet, because there has been no proof of invasiveness. But despite all this, and let's be honest, I'm going to take kind of like on a side tangent. I have a lot to say about this whole tegu situation, obviously. But
that's why you're here.
That's why you're here.
Let's go on a side tangent. Everyone really knows what this is about. There was an invasive issue in Florida, right? They decided to ban them. This is beyond the scope of our conversation right now. I don't agree with them banning them. I think there was a lot of more logical compromises that could have been made. But for whatever reason, they're banned pretty much. Some people are grandfathered in to have them until, I believe, 2024 for breeding purposes. And they're grandfathered to have them as pets if they had them prior to the ban, just regular keepers or whatever. Anyways, this ban went through, right? And now you have the sensationalized momentum, right? Mm-hmm. So now, basically, when you have, like, animal rights activists and the Center for Biological Diversity that drafts a lot of these regulations, they could kind of just run with this. This is their moment, right? Now they have the momentum. The ban just went through in Florida, which is like a stronghold for the reptile community. Okay, basically have the mentality, if we're going to ever try to really, you know, run after it and ban it in neighboring states, this is the time to do it. So they're basically using this sensationalized momentum, so to speak, right? And they're just piggybacking off of that. Because in Alabama, where they banned them, no invasive tegu populations. Georgia hasn't banned them. No invasive tegu populations there. South Carolina, they cited adult animals, right? No invasive population here. North Carolina, no invasive populations, no sightings, no anything.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So here's the thing. The further north you go, obviously, the colder it gets, right? Mm-hmm. Which is the reason you don't see invasive populations in North Carolina. But we're going to actually take a break from just, you know, my beliefs from raising these animals and dealing with them for about 20 years, right? There's actually papers by actual scientists that study this. So far, they have a far stronger expertise than anyone that works for any of these state agencies, right? So there's a paper in Nature. It's called, you could look it up, just Google tegus and Nature, the journal. I think it's called Modeling of Tegu Lizards in Their Native Range and Beyond, something along those lines. If you just Google, you can put the link probably, Jeremy, right? Later What's on. That? You could add the link to the description, correct?
I can, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so add the link later on. So that's usually, since that paper was published in a pretty reputable journal, that's usually the go-to for a lot of people when they're referencing this and trying to ban things, right? So in that paper, they basically take and say, okay, here, look, this is what the ranges and the parameters are for black and white tegus in their native range in South America. We're going to basically take all the data we collected in terms of temperature, in terms of humidity. We're going to take all these different variables under consideration, apply it to the Southeast US, right? And then we're going to do a model and show a diagram of where we believe, we think hypothetically, they could potentially inhabit in the U.S. And they were pretty generous with this model, as these models usually are.
Yeah, up into Washington, D.C.
I'm surprised we're going to see up to Maine, right?
pretty much.
So this generous distribution showed them in North Carolina, and this, bear in mind, is extremely generous, that the targeted background, a slither of the coast. We're talking when you're in the North Myrtle Beach, I'm going to bring some geography in here now, the North Myrtle Beach portion of South Carolina, then when you head right over the border, all the way on the coast of North Carolina, on the east coast of it, literally going up until like Wilmington, right? Mm. Which is what, not even halfway up the state, just a slither of the coast. So basically, if you lived within like a 5 mile distance of the coast range, right? Because that's the warmest portion of North Carolina. And that was the range, which comprises what? Maybe 5% of the state. So they were like, okay, we think maybe in this 5% of the state, they could potentially live. And that would be obviously the extreme of that spectrum, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's the go-to study with extremely generous spectrum. So basically, even the go-to study that people are citing for these bans, right, says that North Carolina, these tegu lizards pretty much can't even live there. And at least minimum of like 95% of the state.
Yeah.
So I bet you they're probably not going to bring up this study that they have brought up in other states, because if anything, it's going to hurt them. Because it's basically going to say, look, the science says what we're trying to do isn't accurate. It's not necessary in North Carolina, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you take someone like me in the U.S. that's breeding tegus, it's common sense that they can't live in North Carolina. Everyone knows that, right? If you take scientific papers for people that study ecology and they study these tegu lizards in their native range and they develop generous models, that agrees that they can't live in practically the entire state, right? Then in addition to that, if you actually speak to people over in Argentina, there's a tegu farm in Argentina. It's in Canuelas, Argentina, right? It's the one that Bert Langerwerf, he actually got his originally stock from this. From them, exactly. So if you speak to them, because I know the individuals there, and I believe they also have YouTube videos, but they're in Spanish, of course, and they state the same thing about these different species. They state about Colombian tegus, that they don't work with Colombian tegus because where they are, it gets too cold, they would all die. With red tegus, where they are in Argentina, which has a similar climate to about like southern South Carolina, the red tegus, they have to bring them in the winter. So they're in the portion of Argentina that gets about as warm as southern South Carolina. And they say the same thing. Red tegus, we have to bring them indoors, right? And then the black and white tegus, they can allow their adults to stay outside. They let them bury down low, and their babies, sometimes they let them stay outside, sometimes they don't, right? But even them, they're saying, okay, black and whites are the only ones we could even potentially leave out here, and we have to make significant accommodations for them. Red tegus do not stay out here. Colombian tegus do not stay out here. So you have it from all these different perspectives where all the evidence is pointing to all these other tegu species, including red tegus, shouldn't even be a part of the conversation. It's ridiculous that they're even mentioned. Black and white tegu should be the only tegu species listed. And then when you approach that tegu species, having them invasive in North Carolina, if you talk to seasoned keepers, which are obviously going to have a bias, that's fine. Let's just throw that to the side. If you talk to actual scientists, right, who theoretically don't really have a bias either way, let's make that assumption, right? Let's give the benefit of the doubt in that particular situation because we don't know those particular researchers. They're even saying it can't live in the state. So what other proof do you need? As a matter of fact, the burden of proof is on the state. If you're trying to regulate this and say, you know what, keepers, breeder, future keepers cannot keep this species. Okay, the burden of proof is on you. You haven't proven that they could overwinter here. Keepers tell you they can't. Seasoned keepers, far more experienced than you guys, say this. In addition to that, the scientific papers, so the scientific community, far more, far more qualified to intelligently comment on the subject matter, all unanimously agree. So it honestly just seems like, okay, well, we're going to pass this regulation because the CBD, the Center for Biological Diversity, handed it over to us, or they put this, or whatever their reasoning is, but basically running with the momentum of sensationalism. And that's really dangerous, not just for tegu lizards or for tegus. But if you think about it, if you pass bans for the sake of just passing bans, That's a can of worms you don't want to open. Because yep. where does it stop? Because that's basically where you're coming to, because the invasiveness is a non-issue. Everything points mm-hmm. to invasiveness, with North Carolina being a non-issue. You're riding sensationalism. So you're telling me if something gets sensationalized in another state, what venomous gets sensationalized somewhere, large constrictors get sensationalized somewhere, other large lizard species get sensationalized somewhere, that I could just ride that wave of sensationalism right into North Carolina? That is just such a dangerous precedent to set, that's why it really scares me. And everyone loses. So I've been talking for a long time. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, no, I think you've really like put all the major points out there. You know, I mean, just the fact alone that from multiple points, there are people saying that there's no way those animals could survive in the climate of North Carolina. Like that should be proof alone, you know, if them becoming an invasive species is the primary concern, that it doesn't need to be a concern at all. I do want to take just 10 seconds and pivot really quick, because we've had a bunch of super chats come through. I just want to make sure these people get recognized. Natalie is in the house. Her live chat's acting up, so she's hitting with some super chats this evening. Definitely appreciate that support, Natalie. She had thrown another one that she will be at that meeting next week, which is awesome. And yes, today's super chats, we will send today's super chats over to USARC as well, since that is our primary topic. So all super chats that happen from tonight's episode are going to go to USARC as well. And then there were a couple more I just want to hit too. From CBD Exotics, we'll support anyone who tries to get the USARC message out there. We definitely appreciate that. That's what we're here for. Absolutely. That's why I bother Phil so much to make sure we get him and his. I want to see what banner he puts behind him next time we have him on. And then Lady Tiz Exotics. This is very informative. Thanks for the detail. That is why I brought Josh on here. Josh can throw science around like it's nobody's business, because he's just that awesome guy that can do that. So that's why we brought him on here. I also see Willie Beard, Venom Central's in the house. I just want to give a shout out to Willie. He's part of the Carolina Herpetological Society team. And I think Nick Patini was here as well. Nice. So just shout out to them, and another shameless plug for the Carolina Herpetological Society. You can check us out on Facebook. Give the page a like while we're still very much in our infancy. 2022 will be a year of fun things for us to get off the ground. And before we go back to it, Natalie dropped in one more super chat. I just want to plug it in here. This is such an amazing argument. Josh, you should be the head speaker for this hearing. Josh is like, here. North Carolina's on your own, man. I did my duty down here.
I'd love to see Josh just like wreck these people who just make me happy.
Yeah,
Nick and I were going to go to the in-person meeting. We were ready.
Yeah.
I was actually excited to go. I'm like, oh, they're going to have to drag me off this stage or wherever I'm speaking.
Listen, if the three of us, if us three were here and I didn't see a good old Josh nerd tantrum. Oh, man. Too good. But yeah, I think it's important that, you know, that is one of our most valuable assets when it comes to making these rebuttals to these proposals is the science literally does not support it. And if you're willing to argue science with a guess, that literally, as Josh was just saying, opens up such a ridiculous can of worms. You know, because then it becomes anything. Anybody that now becomes in charge of making these rule changes could say, hey, you know what? I saw it. Somebody's loose ball python. You know, maybe they could become invasive. I think we should talk about banning ball pythons. You know, if we're not going to bother looking at science and paying attention to what the reality is, we can get ourselves really screwed.
Yeah. So I wanted to add a couple of things, but if you have more to add, Jeremy, I'll
no, go for it, dude. Unless Rob's got anything to say, go for it.
The only thing I was going to say was just that, you know, if they're not basing this stuff in science, what are they basing it on? And, you know, public fear is not like a good reason. There's lots of things that the public is afraid of that there's no good reason for them to be afraid of. And it's just ridiculous. And the fact that they're not offering a better alternative than just like a blanket ban kind of says where their mind's at when it comes to this, because like Josh is saying, there's no science to back up any reason why they should be banning red tegus or Colombian tegus, or, you know, and they're not really posing us with any more of this information. And that coupled with the fact that they canceled the in-person meetings, and then they're not offering the alternative of still hosting some sort of a public comment, is very telling of the situation.
Right. Right. That is super true. Okay. Before we have you continue talking, we're at that halfway point. So I want to make sure we give our sponsor their plug. So we are going to do that really quick, and we'll be back in about 90 seconds. Black Box Cages, located in Buford, Georgia, is your one-stop shop for all of your caging and rack needs. Owners Jen and Clint are at the helm of this fantastic company. With one of the shortest lead times in cage and rack manufacturing, Black Box can satisfy anyone's needs. From baby racks to V70s, arboreal and terrestrial caging to deep-fronted bioactive enclosures, you can find everything you need right here. New enclosure sizes and products are added frequently to their availability, so be sure to check back often. Black Box cages have tons of customizing options for lighting and heating. Along with that, cages and racks can be stacked with metal stacking dowels, and all cage joints are dadoed for improved durability and stability. Most cage units are flat packed, but are pre-assembled prior to shipping to ensure a solid build every time. The Micro, XC18, XT3, Bio-G, and 3-stack V70 ship assembled, and all other racks are shipped freight and assembled. The XR16 and XR20 model racks allow keepers to mix and match tubs. Fitting both Vision and Freedom Breeder tubs, you can mix the V15, V18, and V35S tubs, or the FB5, FB8, and FB35 CVSC tubs. This kind of flexibility allows keepers to raise their animals from hatchling to juvenile or subadult size before needing to upgrade into adult caging. Don't just take our word for it. Go to their website to see countless customer reviews and review videos from keepers all over. To learn more about Black Box Cages, follow them on Facebook and Instagram at Black Box Cages, and of course their website, www.blackboxcages.com. Links to their socials and website will be available in the podcast description. Boom. So there's our shout out for Black Box Cages. Definitely appreciate that. Make sure you go check them out. Okay, Josh, please continue.
I like those cages. Those are pretty neat. I was watching a little video you guys had up there.
That was my I can use iMovie on my phone video.
Once I did on the commercials, I liked it. I was like, man, he has like a good voice for this. I should hire him to do commercials for me.
Let's go, dude.
That's awesome. Anyway, so I was going to add, in terms of talking about like cold tolerance and things like that of different tegu lizards. So obviously you guys know who Bert Langerwerf is, right? I'll give background for people that don't, but you guys know who that is, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, so Bert Langerwerf is basically, in my opinion, I really don't think it'd be considered an opinion, the best lizard breeder to ever live, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
He passed away, I believe, in 2008. But anyway, his farm was in central Alabama in Montbalo, right? It gets about the temperature I'm at over here in South Carolina. So actually it gets warmer than where you guys are at. Quite a bit warmer, actually. So you guys probably, well, especially the portion of North Carolina you guys reside in right now. Anyways, so on his farm, just to kind of put into context, but yet another example. So we're talking about the best lizard breeder in the world. He literally had, for his enclosures for his tegu lizards outdoors, the most insulated enclosure types that he had were buried in the ground. He basically made them like basements. So he had cement structures buried a couple feet in the ground, right? And then they were south-facing with a slant. They had greenhouse glass on top, right? It's basically create a greenhouse effect. So you have that greenhouse effect, just like you would like in a car, basically with the sun, when the sun rays heating a car glass, right, and getting trapped in there, right. And in addition to that, he had a cement around it, so it was kind of like a combination of having like a basement and having a greenhouse, right. So it was really, really strong insulation in those particular enclosures, and they got far warmer than the climate around him because he made them specifically for that purpose, right? Even him with those excellent enclosure designs, right, that he was able to breed black and white tegus and some outdoor pens and the babies he had to give protection. His red tegus, he could not breed unless they were in those specific enclosures, which basically makes it a zone warmer. We're talking about grow zones of like crops and things like that. Mm-hmm. And him basically making it a well-insulated greenhouse, he's making an entire zone warmer at the very least. So even there, where he made significant accommodations for his tegus, he could only keep his red tegus in those specific enclosures to breed them outdoors, and he could not keep his babies outdoors whatsoever. If you read his book, The Lizard Man, he says the red tegus, he tried all different accommodations. So we're talking about a very intelligent man. He had a degree in physics. He taught physics for many, many years, bred lizards for decades and decades and decades. And despite his best efforts, he could not get baby red tegus to live outside. So even with intervention, with artificial means and intervention, unless he added heat to them, so added electricity and inputted energy, he could not get the red tegus to live outside whatsoever, right?
That's crazy.
So, and that's in a warmer climate than you guys. Someone that's very talented, specifically trying to get these animals to live outside, and he could not get the babies to survive. So the first year, he kept them indoors during the cold months. And then once they had some size on them, when they were like 2-3 years old and they were a bit more hardy, then he could put them outdoors. And even then, he had to accommodate them pretty significantly. So that's yet another example. So we have the example from people like me. You have the scientific example from that Nature paper, which is the one that's usually cited. You have the example from the speakers over in Argentina, the breeders there. You have the example of the best lizard breeder that ever lived, Bert Langerwerf. All of these people could never intentionally get a baby red tegu to survive in a cold climate similar to, you know, so Alabama, South Carolina, far warmer than you guys in North Carolina. So how is the state going to propose that they believe it could happen? I would like to for them to tell me how they do it, because I would like to know how to do it. If they must know something I don't. With their little experience, somehow they're more talented with keeping these things alive than actual experts.
Little do you know, the state holds all the power.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, I'm being sarcastic, but it's true. So we're talking about, and you know what? For me to give benefit of the doubt, maybe I'm just being a little bit slanted on this because of my experience in my particular state. And I'm hoping that it's different in North Carolina. I'm hoping that when we go to the meetings and people hear these things, and they're saying, you'll say, you know what? We didn't know that. You're presenting really good facts here. And you're basing it on facts. You're not telling us your feelings and this and that. Because a lot of times when people get too emotional about these things, it's very easy to get emotional about things you care about, right? Mm-hmm. But in my opinion, and I'm going to tie this in. So in my opinion, when people go to meetings and they say, well, I really love this animal, or I really, you know, it's my pet, or it's my baby, or it's my family member. I mean, that's important to you. But you have to realize from the big standpoint of the state, it's pretty much irrelevant, right? So you really have to hit them with the facts. So I think when everyone goes to these meetings, it's important to state the facts. It's important to, you know, look up, you'll include the link for the paper, just to cite that paper. It's important to cite the statements of breeders. It's important to cite the scenario of Bert Langerwerf. It's important to cite the scenario in Argentina of the breeders in Canuelas, right? It's important to say that unanimously across the board, no matter what field you're in, whether it's scientific field or the actual practical field where you're practicing breeding these animals, it's not possible. So basically red tegus, Colombian tegus in pretty much any state shouldn't even be part of the conversation. Georgia, whether it be Georgia or Alabama or South Carolina or North Carolina or wherever else they try to do this. And then when they talk about black and white tegus, we already said it's, you know, that paper basically says what, about 5% of the state. And that's a maybe, a big baby. And right, that's a pretty generous distribution.
Yeah.
And that's literally a slither on the southeast coastal portion. So if someone lives pretty much practically on the beach or barely in from the beach on the southeast tip of North Carolina, maybe their black and white tegu wouldn't die. Maybe. And that's what you're going to use, your basis in an entire species, in the entire state. It's ridiculous. So this is another side point I'm going to mention. And this is related to people's reactions when it comes to bans. And my reaction as well, a lot of times like a knee-jerk reaction people have is, well, I'm just gonna move. I'm just gonna go to this state. And there's a lot of reptile keepers I know that are relocating to different states because of regulations, specifically like Texas, right? I know a lot of Florida keepers that are really good friends of mine that are relocating to Texas, right? Here's the thing I have to say about that. I was tempted to do it too. I'm not gonna lie. I mean, I was very tempted to do it. You know the reason I decided not to do it? It's only placing a Band-Aid on a wound. It's really an extremely temporary fix. It's a very temporary fix because you think regulations aren't going to hit that state. It's only a matter of time if you have all these people relocating there. And basically saying, well, you know what? What are you going to do? Move for the rest of your life? Say, you know what? I'm going to move to South Carolina. Then I'll move to North Carolina. I'll move to Texas. I'll move to California. And the thing is you're running a legitimate business, right? And you're running it, and you're running a legitimate business that contributes to the economy, especially local economy, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, from an ethical standpoint, there's nothing there's no clear and present danger for these animals, especially in a state like North Carolina with a zero invasive potential. Why should you have to run for doing something that isn't wrong? It just doesn't make any sense logically to me. But anyway, when we go to these meetings, it's important to mention. Like factual data, factual information, right? I don't want to tell people what to say because people can say whatever they feel like, obviously. But in my opinion, when people get too emotional, I've heard people cry on meetings about they're going to take away my baby and things like that. I really don't think they're going to empathize with you that much. Maybe temporarily, but in the big scheme of things, you really have to hit them with facts. Saying like, look, the basis for your argument has no foundation. And these are all the different reasons from all these different angles, right? So what are you basing this on? It seems pretty clear that it's based on sensationalism. You can't ban an industry and regulate an industry based on sensationalism. We know how this goes. We know that this is only going to be the tip of the iceberg because if you could do this, then you could pretty much regulate anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think that's right on the nose because the next thing that they're going to be talking about if they can push this through is going to be venomous and constrictors. And I don't think that a lot of states realize or a lot of these politicians realize that when they say constricting snake, what they're really talking about is any snake that's not venomous, because technically just about every snake that is not venomous is considered a constrictor in one way or another. And so when they give these vague definitions and they are not doing things based on facts they're not doing with intention, they're banning all these, you know, things that were not the intended target. And it's unfounded the way that they're doing it. And it's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And if people don't show up to these meetings, if people don't show up and voice these facts and talk to these people and inform them, we could be really heading down a bad, a bad path. You know, people talk about, North Carolina and South Carolina and, they've already got all these like really lax regulations. And it's like to some of the people who live in places that have really strict regulations and try and get some input on what it's like to live there. Cause a lot of those people don't want to live there anymore. They don't, the people, the constituents, the people who are paying the taxes who pay these people don't want to be there anymore. And it's like, they're just going to regulate themselves right out of the job. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. And that whole thing with states and having less regulations, I mean, that's good temporarily. But if you look long term, I mean, Vermont, I remember a long time ago, Vermont was a wonderful place to have reptiles, right? Mm-hmm. The very reasonable reptile regulations. And if you look at Vermont today, it's like, it's really, really a tragedy what happened with that state. I mean, if you like reptiles, it's really not a good state to live at all. The amount of regulations there are just absurd. So, and that didn't take that long in the big scheme of things to occur. So, I mean, this conversation 3 years from now could be totally different, completely different. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's really, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm obviously on the team of all my reptile keepers, but I think we just need to stop being short-sighted. And I'm guilty of the same thing. It's not like, you know, I'm preaching and I'm immune to these issues. I've been short-sighted in the past. I've had the mentality like, oh, well, they're not going to take my animals. I've had the mentality like, well, I'll just move. And it didn't work out for me. I put a tremendous amount of effort in South Carolina to not having this tegu ban here. And I was able to get it so that black and white tegus were not just me, a lot of individuals here that worked really hard to that. For that, and it's just a black and white tegu, that species that's regulated here. But honestly, if we didn't put that effort, everything would have been banned. So the reason I'm giving that example is if we did it here, North Carolina could definitely do it. And honestly, North Carolina could do even better because we had it where just black and white tegus were regulated here due to our efforts, right? But in North Carolina, there's zero arguments for black and white tegu. So I think you guys could really. Well, not you guys, all of us could improve on those efforts in North Carolina. I really right. think if we go there, we state the facts, we could just squash this. And it's going to make a statement. And it's going to have them, you know, Center for Biological Diversity or these organizations, these, you know, these animal rights extremist groups, it's going to give them pause. It's going to say, you know what, if we're going to pass regulations, we're going to have a stronger foundation. It can't be, okay, we'll ride the wave of sensationalism and thrive off people's fears. We have to have a strong foundation because last time we didn't have a strong foundation based on science. I mean, these people tore us apart in the meeting and then we didn't have our regulation. We lost that battle there. So I really right. think if we're really like methodical about it, that it's going to go really well. So it really just depends on, you know, who shows up.
That's exactly it.
So
that's exactly it. I didn't mean to cut you off. As soon as you said that, Willie posted this comment. We need people to get involved. Reptile keeping is not a crime, but they're trying to ban reptile keepers, period. And I brought this point up multiple times on some of my Instagram lives. When we fought HR 669 and Senate Bill 2811 years ago, in my mind, that was the glimpse of, you know, animal rights groups and all these larger organizations showing their hand of what they want the final outcome to be. You know, and in knowing that, obviously that didn't pass because of how insane it was. But knowing if that's the hand that they were really trying to put out, then we know now that's the end goal. And to think that these organizations aren't thinking long term, they're not thinking 20, 30 years in advance. You know, we would be foolish to think that they aren't thinking that way. So we need to also be thinking that way as well. And part of that is in being able to have these arguments where, if there's no science to be the foundation of your argument holds no value. And that really is one of the most solid things that we have, you know, which is why, you know, Josh, like you're an invaluable resource when it comes to stuff like this. And you know, obviously, Phil, U.S. ARC and the entire U.S. ARC team is so valuable when it comes to this. You know, it's the fight will never be over, but we understand enough. We understand more than these organizations think that we do, you know, to be able to give our reasoning and make the people that are in charge of making these decisions happen to take pause and be like, oh, we didn't think about that, or, oh, we didn't know about that, because they're not being given that information. They're only being given the one side. And when the deep pockets allow that group to be the only side that gets heard, these meetings are where we have to show out and say, hey, look, we know you've probably gone out to lunch or grabbed coffee with that guy 6 or 7 times because he just helped fund half your campaign, you know, but he's full of crap. And here's why, you know, that's where we really get our moments to shine. And then Savage Serpents just dropped down this super chat. Fight the good fight, my dudes. You've got support all the way out in the Pacific Northwest. We definitely appreciate that for sure. I've been seeing a bunch of people in the comment section all over Facebook and YouTube just wanting to get involved. If anybody's unsure or if they missed what we said earlier on how to register, for the Zoom meeting. The Zoom meeting is January 20th at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can go right to usarc.org. Click on the North Carolina. It's a week from today. That's right.
Yeah.
You can go right to the North Carolina Alert. There's a direct link to register for that Zoom meeting. It's literally first name, last name, email address, click enter. Like that's it. And you literally, if you don't want to speak or if you're not a confident public speaker, that is okay. But to be literally an extra block on the screen, it literally helps. It literally helps. I think that's probably the one good thing of losing the meetings, the in-person meetings. Is each in-person meeting, it sounded like, oh, you know, there's going to be a handful of people that are here, and a handful of people that are here, and a handful of people that are here. You know, obviously work schedules and life schedules and whatever kind of get in the way. But now there's no excuse, really. You know, everybody checks their phone when they're at work. let's be real. You know, so you can join this Zoom meeting and put your phone off to the side and maybe have the volume on low so you can hear what's going on. But to be in that room with us, you know, fighting for the opposition is invaluable, and that's really what we need.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a great point. There was something else I wanted to add really quick. Rob, were you going to say something? Did I cut you off?
No, you're good, man.
Okay, awesome. So in South Carolina, when they were trying to, when they were trying to like kind of sneak in the venomous ban at the last second, right before the end of the session, yeah. Right? So there was the efforts of the entire community. We came together and then we all nipped it in the butt at the end, right? So there's one thing I want to say specifically, at least in my personal experience with that. Hopefully they don't mind if I mention their names. I don't think they would. There's actually something quite positive and complimentary. So basically myself, Nick Bottini, and Will from Venom Central, I believe the name of his company is, we went and we spoke to a senator. We spoke to Senator Bennett, who is he's in charge of the ethics committee over in South Carolina. And we basically sat down and we told them our concerns with them basically piggybacking this venomous ban along with something unrelated, along with other concerns that we had about it, right? That responsible keepers should have some level of rights, you know, so on and so forth, right? So in addition to all those emails that were sent, our concerns were literally mentioned in that meeting, right? So that meeting literally had a stronger impact. So that 15, 20 minute meeting I had directly with that senator, right, who really doesn't have any particular, because he's not the one that was actually, his name wasn't on this particular bill, right? So he wasn't really biased pro or for or against this particular bill. So that 15 minute meeting made more of a difference than the hours and hours and hours I dedicated and wasted my time speaking to South Carolina DNR, right? Mm-hmm. Is that something important to realize when these state agencies are trying to pass these regulations, right? There is a conflict of interest there, right? Because they're the ones that are hearing your concerns, right? And they're saying, okay, our idea that we generated, are we going to counteract this or modify this? Or are we going to go along with what these stakeholders have concerns with, right? So there's an inherent conflict of interest there, no matter what, obviously, right?
Yeah.
When you speak to a senator or a legislator or a committee member and someone not really personally invested in that regulation passing or not, there's no inherent bias, right? There's no inherent conflict of interest. And that's the reason why I think when we spoke to that senator, it had far stronger of an effect. And our concern was actually mentioned in the meeting specifically than when I spoke to South Carolina DNR. Because when I was speaking to South Carolina DNR, I don't want to get a conversation much about them because it's a moot point at this point. Basically, I was speaking to the individuals that wanted to regulate it and basically get another notch on their belt, have something else to regulate, have more funding to regulate something. So there was a massive conflict of interest. So unless there was massive, massive public outcry, which let's be honest, with reptiles, there's a lot of people interested in reptiles, but it's not something as mainstream as some other, you know, domesticated animals or even certain other exotics, right? So massive outcry is not super likely. We're obviously going to do our best, of course. But they know that, you know, if they pass this, yeah, we're probably going to be fine, right? So even if you have an extremely legitimate, scientific, thoughtful argument that they even may even know is correct, they really don't have an invested interest in passing that, right? Because it goes against what they wanted to regulate, right? So that literally hurts their pockets. It jeopardizes their funding. And that's what keeps them having jobs and paying their bills, right? There's an inherent conflict of interest. When you approach other individuals, so the reason I'm mentioning that I think it's worth everyone's time to not just approach the state agencies. Hopefully North Carolina is excellent. Hopefully you speak to the state agency of North Carolina. I know it's not called DNR. It's called something else. But the equivalent of DNR in that state. And hopefully we speak to them. They hear our thoughts and it goes over smoothly, right? And the experience is far better than the experience I had. But that being said, I think it's important to reach, to think outside the box. Say, you know what? I'm going to contact my local legislator. I'm going to contact, you know, committee members directly. I'm going to do things that people usually do not do. Because that's when I saw results. When I thought outside the box and I was like, okay, I'm going to do all these things that we should do, contact committee members and you know, write in these emails. I did all that. But when we thought outside the box, it made a massive difference. So I think that's food for thought for people. I'm not instructing people on what they should or shouldn't do, but maybe speak to your local representatives, speak to as many people as you can to have your voice heard and try to approach the issue from different angles. And more importantly, try to contact people that do not have a direct conflict of interest when expressing what your concern is.
Absolutely,
man. It's just those little things that add up. And a lot of people don't take that into consideration when it comes to the bigger picture of things. And, you know, a lot of people in Florida were really upset about the way that the meeting in Florida went with some of the regulated species in there. And, you know, we had some people show up. We had some people who threw strictly emotional arguments at them. We had some people hit them with straight facts. It seems like they kind of already had their mind made up before they went to that meeting. And we're hoping that's not the case with North Carolina. Some of the people I know who were in Florida said that they came out, they sent an email within moments of the hearing ending, basically them stating that things are going to get banned no matter what. That's the decision right. They've already made. It didn't really matter what people were going to say at that meeting, yeah. Et cetera, et cetera. And I'm hoping that that's not the case with North Carolina. I'm hoping that we'll be able to make a little bit more of an impact and get a chance to talk to these people and really, you know, get this information across.
No, exactly. A lot of times in certain other states, at least my experience in my state, the meeting was more so just a formality. It was obvious.
Yep.
It was more so just a formality to say that they had the meeting. And we had tons of people speaking against it, having strong arguments that were more so based on facts and personal experience and were more prepped. And it was very obvious. It was just a formality. Like, okay, we're obligated to have this to say that we took in public input. Thank you for all your public input and your strong points. We're going to, you know, pretty much do it anyway. And I'm hoping that's not the experience in North Carolina. Just because it was the experience in my state doesn't necessarily mean that'll be the case in North Carolina. You know, maybe your state agency or our state agency in North Carolina is excellent. And I'm hoping that's the case. I'm trying to think optimistic. I'm usually optimistic. The last two times you guys had me on, this time and last time, it was about negative things about regulations. If we talk about anything beyond regulations, I'm like happy, go lucky, joking around, everything's wonderful. I like to stay positive and just have fun and enjoy reptiles. But hopefully next time will be like a lighter note, right? Hopefully we can talk about snakes or lizards.
Yeah. Absolutely.
One more thing that I wanted to touch on. I don't know if Jeremy, if you've seen this yet, but North Carolina is slated to get hit with a severe ice storm this upcoming week or so.
I did see that. Yeah.
So the irony of the situation is we're about to have this meeting right after the state gets slammed with frozen temperatures, sleet, and ice that these tegus would not be able
Woo-hoo,
to survive.
For our argument.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be nice if they did because here's the thing. I know when they were considering banning Burmese pythons years ago in South Carolina. Well, they're considering banning them. They did an experiment in a portion of South Carolina or they did it in Savannah, Georgia. But anyways,
I think it was Georgia.
Yeah, it might have been Georgia.
They put them outside in the cages?
Yeah, with the Burmese pythons. And they all died, right?
They all died,
I'd love to see a study like that. I told South Carolina, but I would love to see a study like that in North Carolina. If the Burmese proof is on the state, how about this? You guys take however many black and white tegus you want and actually provide proof because so far everything is pointing against you. Everything, right? Mm-hmm. Experts in the field are saying that that's incorrect, what your assumptions are. Scientists in the field are saying the same thing, right? So you have academics and then you also have people from a practical standpoint both saying the same thing. So you have no proofs, which really compromises your position, right? So if you want to really set a strong foundation on your position, take these tegus, put them in a centrally located portion of the state. That would be a good average of the temperatures, right? Put them at sea level, right, if you want, or whichever altitude is the average for the state. Put them centrally located in the state. And I can tell you right now, whether they put one or 1,000 tegus, 99% of them will be dead when they come back in the spring. Why don't they just do that? That's a very easy – you know how many tegus they have available to in Florida right now? I'm sure if they speak to that state agency, they could get tons of tegus handed over to them. So the burden of proof – so the reason I'm mentioning that, the burden of proof is on the state. They have plenty of opportunities to do so. So if you're saying that they're an issue here, despite people far more knowledgeable and qualified to speak on the subject matter saying otherwise, prove it.
Prove it. Exactly.
Yep. Yep.
Exactly.
Absolutely. All right. Yeah, that's honestly it. All right, as we're wrapping up, I just want to make sure I get this one last super chat thrown in there from Petsotics. They got their US Arc t-shirt today. That's awesome. Definitely appreciate you joining US Arc. So obviously, I know we've certainly focused a lot on tegus. That's not the only thing we're facing here in North Carolina. We have our native species import nonsense that's going on too that we discussed with Phil last week. So I definitely wanted to focus on tegus today. That's one of the reasons why we brought Josh in. But I would encourage everybody that's still here, still watching, to go check out last week's episode with Phil. We went a little bit more in depth on that stuff as well. Just talking about what that means. Just realizing that when the state organization is trying to pass something like this, pass these kind of rule changes, they're not necessarily realizing the impact they're going to have on their own agency to make some of these things come to fruition. You know, if you want to establish a permitting system, you know, in some instances, fair, valid, you know, but, you know, something like a corn snake. I mean, how many people own corn snakes? How long have corn snakes been kept in captivity? There's a lot of corn snakes that would need to be permitted. you know, vendors coming into shows and all that stuff. We're talking about one of the most popular pet colubrids. So that's certainly something that we need to be aware of as well. Also, just to bring it back up, since I mentioned checking out last week, public comment for the ESA stuff with the tortoises has ended. It ended on January 10th. I don't know what if there's been any info on outcome on that. We'll have to have Phil back, but there's so much going on, and I think it's also very important while we have this thing directly on our plate right now, that we stay ever vigilant, because there's inevitably more stuff that's going to be coming our way, maybe not here in the Carolinas, but all over the place. So make sure that you're all following USARC. Go to usarc.org and just sign up for that newsletter. At the bare minimum, it's free, and this way you can be aware and in the know of everything that's going on, because it's important. And we certainly appreciate the people all over the country that are, you know, chiming in saying that they'll be at that meeting and stuff. And, you know, if this was happening in your state, you'd want to see that same kind of support from people. So I think that's it for me. I don't have anything else to add. Rob or Josh, if you guys have anything else to add, throw it down.
No, I'm good now. I said quite a bit, but just, yeah, everyone just show up at the Zoom meeting, obviously, and just try to make strong points and just try to focus on the facts, because facts are on our side on this one. Facts are strongly on our side, and it's hard to argue facts, right? Because while they're arguing opinions and sensationalized nonsense, if we hit them with facts, it's going to kind of put them in a really compromising situation. And hopefully it doesn't even come to that. Hopefully once we mention the facts, they're like, you guys are right. This is ridiculous. And it gets thrown out. I like to think positive. So that's all I really have. So everyone, if they could show up to the Zoom meeting, you know, get off work if you can, or get off work early. And hopefully there's many Zoom meetings, but it seems like that's not going to be the case. It's just going to be this one no matter what. Yeah. Hopefully everyone attends it. And I know it's tough because we're all busy. I literally was just on my farm doing like a million things. And I just put everything down. I was like, oh, I got to do this podcast.
You know, it's funny, as I was like, do I text Josh just as an extra reminder, or is he going to remember? I was like, no, he should remember.
I remembered. I was dealing with monitor lizard stuff, and I have females that are about to lay. You know how it is. So,
yeah.
Right? You put everything down. You put everything down what you're doing, and sometimes things are important. You really just have to take the time, right? So we all are busy, with whether it be work or hobbies or family or whatever it is, right? But when things are important to you, you take time to talk about it. So.
Absolutely. Yeah,
and Josh, we ask everybody one important question to wrap up the show.
That's right.
What under the greater umbrella of reptiles, whether it be something in your collection or something you saw on Instagram or Facebook or wherever, what is something right now that's got you excited about what's going on with reptiles?
Well, actually, this time it kind of connects. Usually it's like a species, right? Because I'm really big into breeding and I'm like obsessed with all kinds of living things, especially lizards. But anyways, with me right now, it's actually related to what we're talking about now. Just people getting pumped up and enjoying USR. Like Phil, for the first time like ever, I think he actually hired people to help him. So because Phil was kind of like, it wasn't a one-man show. Obviously, they had like, you know, their board and stuff like that. But, you know, just having so much support now for USR and having so many people pumped to join in and having so many people having like this teamwork type mentality and it kind of just building up. I think that's awesome because that gives me a lot of faith in the future of, you know, this industry that I love so much.
Hell yeah. That's what it's all about, man. Josh, thank you so much for coming on tonight. I appreciate your input and your knowledge. Like, I really need to come down and visit your place because it's a crime. I've been down here for 2 months and I haven't even come down to visit you yet.
Yeah. Come in the spring. Everything's outside. You come in the spring, it's going to be awesome. All the animals are going to be out.
Heck yeah.
Herping. Yeah, we're going to go herping.
Trip. Awesome.
Yeah, take the field trip.
Hell yeah, man. Heck yeah. All right, so if people want to find out more about you and the things that you're breeding and the things that you're doing, where do they go?
Oh, so just on the Herpetofauna by Josh Ortiz, whether it be Instagram, whether it be Facebook, pretty much anything across the board. If they look up my name, Josh Ortiz, on Facebook, under my profile, I put Herpetofauna in parentheses since my name is a common name where I'm from. And they could just look me up and message me. I'm pretty easy to talk to. And I always respond to all my messages, usually in the evening, but I always reply. So that's good.
That's where it's at. Cool. Thank you so much, Josh. I appreciate you, man.
Dude. Awesome, guys. Thanks so much. You guys have a good night.
You too.
Later.
Bye-bye.